Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Hazel. Before we get started with the usual mischief and mayhem that is my show, I just want to extend our love, sympathy, and best wishes to everybody who was affected by the terrorist attacks that happened on this day 12 years ago. I'm sure all of us who were old enough to remember exactly what we were doing at that time. And to all the firefighters who ran in to rescue people as people were trying to run out who lost their lives. And also to the thousands of soldiers who, when the war on terror began shortly after that, went out and were willing to put their lives on the line. And even though many of you didn't come back, we would still honor and remember you. But to two people especially, we want to say the following things. One is out to Bart Burdick, who actually fought in the army in Iraq from 2004 to 2005. He is a dear friend of mine, and we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your service. And to my friend Cora's husband, Brandon Haskell, he was in the Navy and served from 1996 to 2002 and served in Afghanistan. We want to send a big thank you to you for your service as well, and to all your comrades who didn't come home, to all your comrades who did come home, and to all your comrades who are still fighting for freedom. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And this song is from us to you with love.
Ave Maria, gratia plena, Maria of a crown. Oh,
There's other things in it that are saying that you know, they, if you don't buy your own healthcare, they will actually take some of your tax refunds to cover any services that you've had and other things. And there's a lot of controversy behind it. But it, you know, brought up a couple of subjects in regards to healthcare over here and how it runs. And there's two people who are going to call in who work in different parts of the country in the healthcare field. And that is Brett and Bart Burdick. As you know, they're twin brothers who are totally insane on most things and crazy, and I love them to death, but who also are very passionate about the healthcare field. So they're going to be calling in to give their point of view on the medical profession. Part of what we, you know, have to deal with is that, you know, there's a lot of things that go on healthcare-wise that cause, you know, please don't, Robert, not right this minute, that cause a lot of issues for people. And that is like the lack of funding to be able to go and see doctors for just regular checkups, being able to see a doctor for, you know, routine things that need to be done. And in some cases, as somebody and I were talking about earlier this week, you know, they got told that they were entitled to state assistance, but only if they paid a ridiculous amount of money. And I mean, and it was ridiculous. We're talking about thousands of dollars, not just a couple of hundred, not just like 10, 20. We're talking about thousands of dollars to be able to get state covered insurance in the state they live in.
Wait,
and it's, hold on, I don't know. And it's one of the things that's like, you know, the basic thing that we need to survive is being denied to a lot of us. And then even if you do have good healthcare coverage, it's being able to get into your doctors and stuff. As you know, some people may not know, but a couple of weeks back, I did have a very nasty kidney infection. And when I did call my doctor to try and get in, he couldn't see me for a week because of how booked he was, which prompted me to then having to go to the emergency room to get treatment. Mm-hmm. And that happens to so many people that, you know, the doctors are so overwhelmed by how many people have, you know, how many people have to see a doctor that they do get so booked solid, which does resort, you know, to people going and having to go to emergency rooms, having to go to urgent care and stuff. And it's, you know, it's a tragic thing that we have to deal with that. I mean, yeah, I come from a country where I'm actually pretty lucky in the sense that the country I was born into, which is England, has a healthcare system. And our healthcare system may not be the best, you know, it's far from the best. But one of the things that it did do is that if you were a British citizen, you had the right to go to any doctor, any hospital, and get treatment. Prescriptions, speaking of which, we might end up having to go to the emergency room as Robert breaks his foot in the kitchen. Brett, be on warning. I may have to call you to take me to the emergency room with Robert. But, you know, it's one of those things where we were blessed in that sense that we could do those things. Now, I know that I have Bart who's just calling in right now. Bart is actually in Oklahoma.
Say hello to Jim Ross.
We'll get there. He works in the medical profession. He's, you know, worked in very various fields of the medical profession down there. He's not just one point of view. So we are going to get Bart on the line and have a chat with him. If it does. Hey, Bart, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you doing, Hazel?
We're doing good. So give us your views on how you think the medical system is running right now and your thoughts on the Obama healthcare plan.
Sure. I just want to say first, my heart goes out to all the families, so suffering from what happened on 9/11. My condolences and my prayers still go out to the family and friends of those that were lost on that day, and to all our first responder teams, to the fire department in New York, to the police department, and all the brave men and women that were a part of the rescue efforts. My prayers are with those family and friends.
I agree with you.
And then going into the discussion, the issue tonight is that, for me, it's been an experience being able to see all throughout the course of my healthcare career, and as well as the education system. Just a little background to give knowledge of what I know about the Affordable Care Act of 2010, as well as healthcare system in general. I've been a CNA, EMT basic, outreach phlebotomist, a medical assistant, a nurse technician, an RN, and I'm going to NP school. So along those different echelons of, working in healthcare systems, if it included a hospital, a clinic, a long-term care facility, a laboratory service, I've, got a keen understanding of how the coding, how the insurance too is. I've worked with billing and other people that are in charge of the healthcare expenditures, and in particular in learning about the present issue of the Affordable Care Act, or what is often referred to as Obamacare 2010. A lot of people don't understand. A lot of the introduction for the Obamacare was more so for taking away our healthcare expenditures. What the bill would propose is basically absolving up towards $10 billion in a decade for fees of our healthcare system, because our healthcare system is so wasteful. One point in general is the administration fees. There's about anywhere from $7 to $8 billion in the 10 years that they've been trying to absolve for healthcare expenditures, because of our country, the gross domestic product for our healthcare expenditures more than any country in the world, yet our healthcare outcomes are not even close compared to the European countries and other countries of the world. We use about 18% of our GDP on healthcare, and it's not very well planned out how we have our healthcare system, because ours, unlike national healthcare systems, is more of a profit-driven healthcare, meaning when the insurance companies, a lot of people in the 80s and 90s, United Healthcare, the HMO, the PPO, the managed healthcare plans, what it did is bring about a business aspect more so than it has in years prior. So then what you had is a lot of profit coming off the, off healthcare. And, that's good for the insurance companies, but for the patients, a lot of times if they can't afford insurance, if they're like low socioeconomic backgrounds, say the poverty level, 20,000 or less, all of that example, a lot of times they have to apply for Medicaid. In Oklahoma, the Suna Care, in Wisconsin, the Badger Care, and then you have to see if some doctors are going to cover it. I've been part of clinics and, healthcare where doctors actually, they don't want to accept these type of insurance programs because reimbursement rates, what have you. It's a very behind-the-scenes type of thing where you only really get to have a full grasp of all the intricacies of this once you've gone to different type of settings, spoken with the billing, so on and so forth. I don't want to overwhelm, with factoids about all this, but just to make my point that I am aware of a lot of the intricacies that go on. As a nurse practitioner, or soon-to-be nurse practitioner, I should say, this has to be one of the foremost things that are in the back of our mind as providers, because if we order, say, a CT test or some type of diagnostic exam and the patient can't afford it, we need to then find out, through whatever healthcare systems we have, especially this Obamacare, how are we going to manage our patients if they're not able to afford this, but yet get the same outcomes that we want? It's a very peculiar and it's a very sticky situation on what you ethically want to do, but also have to keep in mind what the patients can afford. And really, a lot of this, the legislation has to do with trying to absolve the healthcare cost, not so much what's best for the patient, the people. That's why there's even trying to get up towards, as low as the 18-year-old groups and above to get healthcare insurance, when, a lot of times in general, not always, but in general, this patient population is pretty much healthy. And then when they tack on, as you mentioned earlier in the program, the $75 fee involved with the taxes, a lot of times, and legislators will confuse the language of our Constitution, It really is not constitutional to do that. What they're trying to go off is there's a little mention of the Constitution saying if the Republicans don't agree with how they go about running the course of health care, so on and so forth. It's a little tidbit on, but it really has no bearing on the health care system. You can't impose a health care system on a person. It is actually unconstitutional. I reviewed that as well 2 years ago when I had researched the Affordable Care Act. As you mentioned, you read a part of it. I read extensively a lot of parts to Section 23. There's a few other parts to it that, you know, it's really, how can I say this? It's not fully the best accessible health care that as patients and people we're going to be able to get. The tier groups, you know, the gold, silver, the bronze, there's all that. You know, it's like a meaning well type of system, but eventually, you know, when it comes to fruition, it's not going to be one of the best things for us, in my opinion.
Right. Now, you're in the medical field. You know, as I said earlier, you've worked in, you know, you haven't just worked in one particular area. You've worked in clinics, emergency rooms, nursing homes. I mean, the VA, everything. So you've seen, like, the medical side of things from very many different aspects. You've seen it from, you know, the vets who come in who desperately need help to elderly people who, you know, we're supposed to be caring for in their last years of life to emergency room situations. In your opinion, what do you think that really needs to be done that would help make people's health a lot better and also just improvements that you've seen yourself that could be done?
Sure. And I've already spoken with my brother, who's going for his doctorate in healthcare administration. I know he'll be on a program soon, but we've kind of bounced this idea back. And it's not really a national healthcare system, but more so that mimics the VA system, but without the priority groups, you know, a differentiating on care based on priority groups. A lot of people that know they go to the VA for care, they understand what I'm mentioning, priority 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8A, 8B, so on and so forth. What it would be is basically a flat rate system. You take out the insurance group. There'd still be profit for the providers, affordable health care for the patients. But what I had it proposed in, you know, what I would come up with is basically there'd even be what I would call civilian coupons or other type of programs to assist lower income people to be able to help out to pay for those health care expenditures, bring down the prices, flat rates all across the board, so that, say, this person doesn't get a better benefit than the other person, who, in my opinion, health care should be across the board because we all need it the same. A person with, you know, a gallbladder infection and another person with a gallbladder infection, they both need those, you know, if it's deemed under the prognosis of the provider, they both need it to be taken care of. Why should one be able to have it and not other? You know, I am very deep-seated in the belief that health care should be available to all citizens. And going back to, you know, expounding more on answering your question, it would be basically a flat rate system to where everyone would be mimicking the VA program, not so much a national health care system, but an affordability to where even the providers would discourage it, but eventually they would understand that instead of making the few with more profit, you'd make a more demand, you know, more patients with those existing flat rates, and you basically would make up for that cost because of the influx of the amount of patients you see. There would be three issues involved with this, having providers on board. That would be an issue because a lot of people at first would probably be discouraged. They wouldn't be patient to be able to have this program implemented. Having the legislation part, would it be legal? People would consider it maybe a monopoly of a healthcare system since it is now perceived as a business. The idea of having an overall type of system, like a national health care system, eliminates the individualistic approach of having a profit, you know, profit sharing, and, you know, no one's going to want that, especially if that's what's driving their business, their force. And then the third is just being able to have people on board to understand this and have people say, hey, this is what would be best for us, you know, across the board. An example of the certificates that would be for patients, like say if they did community work, they get $200 off this health care amount, and basically just by doing good work, say they're unemployable, disability, but say they do a good work or something, it helps to benefit them, you know, because they can't work, but yet they can still serve a a way in which they can decrease their bill. It benefits society, yet also pays for that individual bill. Say a flat rate of, I don't know, an MRI would be just a straight $1,000 or $800, and you take $200, heck, that's one-fourth of the scan off. What it
right.
would come down to is a very multi-faceted type of way in which you'd set up the flat rates, set up the affordable care, and then have these existing community programs and set up certificates, as well as the legislation behind. It wouldn't be just like snap at a finger, oh, this would be something that could be done in a matter of a few days. Of course, it would take some time, as in any healthcare system, but what it would be is a win-win situation in the end for both the provider and a patient, and taking out that third person, the insurance companies, because, you know, you and I and everyone knows, in dealing with insurance companies, a lot of times the pre-existing conditions, some other issues that get in the way, or your limits, you know, your annual limits, all this stuff, it just does not help more. And to me, it's more of a finagling process for patients to access health care. When really,
and you know what, with your idea that you just said, I think what also would help is those people who say don't have insurance, who, if, as you say, by doing some volunteering or whatever, they'd get a discount off, you know, they'd be more likely to pay any medical bills that come through their door because, say, instead of getting a $5,000 bill, which is what I received, you know, after I collapsed, you know, a couple of months back, instead of getting a $5,000 bill, maybe I'd just get a $500 bill. And it's easier to work out a payment plan and a way to pay that back than it is these god-awful amounts.
Well, exactly. It would be because we have to understand, you know, there's only a certain amount that our money can go for. You know, we can only stretch the dollar so much. You know, in this day and age, everything costs money. There's multiple expenditures, bills, rent, you know, so on and so forth. We have to consider that for our children, for, say, if you have parents that are not doing, you know, there's many things to keep in mind. And then you say to someone, oh, now you have this $20,000 bill or $50,000 or more. Imagine the devastation it has to their life where basically, say they needed it, and I won't go into more specific, but I feel like a lot of those times when people have like a congenital issue or a condition in which it is not of their own doing, and then they have to pay this thing for which they never had any doing of their own, and then you basically have a bill for them, it hurts the family. And to me, I just
exactly.
don't understand why. Like, say if there's a guy driving a motorcycle without a helmet and he gets hurt, God forbid, that's awful, but he didn't pay attention to the safety measures he could have done, as opposed to say, someone with, you know, diabetes mellitus 1, or in the case of some people I know, hydrocephalus or a few other conditions. They didn't have a choice, but yet now they have to
right.
pay the same as someone that makes bad health care decisions or makes reckless or unsafe behaviors. I think there's a
now
problem
we actually,
there. I think those type of behaviors
you carry on,
should be
Bob, we actually have Brett now in the conversation as well. So, Brett, please jump in at any point as well. You're another one who's worked in all the different fields that there are, and unfortunately you've been on the other side of it, on the receiving end where, you know, through no fault of your own, I hope, that a lot of the things that you've had to deal with when it comes to dealing with the healthcare system, you've had surgeries, illnesses, breaks, bumps, bruises, I mean, everything. So, you know, you've been a patient for the VA, you've worked everywhere as well. So what's your take on what's going on the healthcare front?
Okay. Well, thank you for the kind introduction. I just was going to allude back to what Bart was mentioning. He was making some great points, hitting on a lot of the topics, and you were kind of stemming off of that too by adding in some of the experiences of yourself. And I know given the two experiences, mine, yours, and I guess anybody else's who's either listened to the show or has had it personally, they can vouch for that too, where they've had to see firsthand and experience what it's like. And I think that's part of the benefit, I should say, of what Bart's going for, because he's getting his nurse practitioner, so he's going to be seeing more direct exposure to it on the firsthand level. But coming off of that, in a perspective from the grand scheme of things, I had just decided to look up some things because I know this was going to be the topic at hand tonight about the gross domestic product. And I looked up the fiscal year of this year, and it looks like healthcare is still the top. It's at 19%. And surprisingly, the next thing are pensions, education, and defense. So kind of going off of what Bart was saying, if we can alleviate some of the pressures that are done through the costs and everything else that's set up, especially through the Obamacare, we can redirect the distribution of the percentages of the gross domestic product where healthcare can maybe not have to consume so much of it. We can actually add to our defense, our education, the welfare system, and it looks like the pension too, because the pension is the main thing for the people who have worked a long time, who have been sacrificing their lives, dedicating their profession, their trade. I think it would be beneficial if there's a way that not only you can serve the people, but better the communities and the whole healthcare affected people of this country as a whole. That's I think the big picture in the grand scheme of things, because if it's anything that all these other countries with social health care and such have learned, it's the benefit of the citizens of those countries won't exist if they're not there to do so. And that's the big problem, because when you see a broken system, you see in Egypt, you see all these different type of countries who revolt. And not to get off the political tangent based off the healthcare topic we're on, but those things coincide. Things affect things. It's all intertwined. So the thing is, if one area can't be remedied over a long period of time, all that's going to do is cause frustration, and then you're going to have these issues like I think you can already see given this country with the decisions to go to Syria and such. You see how just little things can add up, and how things over time can add up, and then you combine the two, it really boils the pot without taking off the lid, that's not going to do any benefit for anybody. So I think keeping that in mind, by not having these fees that are associated with it and taking and garnishing, so if you will, for lack of better terms, these fees out of your taxes, which, by the way, as years go by, and I can't remember if it's incremented every year or every other year, well, from the Obamacare, what it says is it steadily increases. So, and there's different prices reflective, respective of the, family and such like that. So you have to take that into consideration too. It's not just one flat fee, and that'll be the case throughout the time of this existence. It actually increases from what I can recall. And I guess another thing is that the devil's advocate, the caveat to all this, would be kind of like what I recall having a discussion of during my first year in my doctorate school. It's you have this discussion. It's the old age question: is healthcare a right or a privilege? And I guess the more you try to commercialize, you try to McDonaldize healthcare, yeah, it's going to end up looking at first blush like a privilege. But then again, I mean, aren't we allowed to be in an existent without having to have issues? Most of which sometimes aren't even our doing. You look at all the my brother and I were just having a discussion about the carcinogenic, cancer-causing things that are in this world. Basically, everything you can get exposed to at some point in time, food, air, whatever, has cancer-causing products in them. So in what way can the government not take some responsibility for that and show that by doing something about it, as opposed to just commencing with doing it and then having to deny people, when it's truly sometimes the people who are behind the cause that are the people that should have to take the responsibility.
I do actually have a question for both of you, and this pertains between state-run healthcare coverage and those who can actually afford to, pay for it through premiums, through their jobs and everything. Do you think, and I'll tell you the reason why I'll ask this question. A friend of mine, her son was born very, very early. Bless his heart, he's the biggest fighter that there is. But he was recently taken back into hospital, had RSV. She went in to see him one day this week. Little boy screaming the place down. The nursing staff hadn't changed his clothes since the day before, hadn't changed his diaper. His diaper was actually full of poop that had split out the back. had really, really bad diaper rash and everything. And she was telling me before then that, you know, she's on state-run insurance. And it made me actually wonder, do you think that in certain cases when doctors and higher up, I'm not saying the nursing staff necessarily, but they're not, you know, most nurses are really good, but there are some bad ones. But do you think that, or have you ever experienced where people higher up than you have said, you know what, this person is getting state-funded insurance, so, you know, just do what you can, but don't spend a lot of time with them, you know, as opposed to somebody who's paying premiums and has a really good insurance company?
Well, I would like to answer. In regards to my NP clinicals, I work at a Today clinic where a lot of times it's private pay, whatever they can afford, Medicaid, and, you know, just sooner care, and that's what they're able to afford, as opposed to think where I also do my clinicals, where a lot of the patient population has lots of insurance, you know, Cross Blue Shield, Medicare, United Healthcare, things of that nature. A lot of times the tests that are done for most people with the insurance, we try and do a lot more, and I see the providers, PAs, doctors, and nurse practitioners do a lot more as far as testing, diagnostics, labs, because they can cover that. A lot of times in the patient population that comes into the Today clinic, the clinic where I'm at, you know, we have to say if they need a scan but they can't afford it, we basically have to basically manage what they have with what they can afford, and that's about it. We can't seek out more options for them because they're limited due to access or insurance reasons, which is, for me, it's very heartbreaking because they need some of that care. Like, they need a scan or an X-ray or, you know, what have you, but they have no means of covering it, or they need cold turn sensitivities on what could be considered a boil that has MRSA, but for most time they're covered with a broad-spectrum antibiotic. You know, we put them on a Bactrim or a Teflex, and really, who knows if that's even sensitive to whatever organism, bacteria or otherwise, is coming out of that boil. And I don't mean to be graphic, but it alludes to the point where they're not fully, because of their financial and insurance means, getting the best care. You know, I see it from both patient populations in both my clinical settings. And, it, you know, that each side of the spectrum, it is so overwhelming to see the changes in care. Basically, like you mentioned, one's like, okay, let's do this general thing, and, you know, that's it. Or, you know, and get them out of here, and then the same thing. It's basically like a replicated type of care. Whereas in the other type, okay, you can do this diagnostic, let's go for an MRI or a CT. And it's just overwhelming, the disparity, you know, the two sides of the spectrum. And a lot of things, I just want to make a little side note, for the national care, Medicare, the economists are projecting that Medicare, the funds will, they're projecting, again, this is just an economical projection based on the Common Trust Fund set up by Congress that has set up the Medicare many years ago, that it's going to be exhausted for whatever that fund is based on our deficit, or based on our debt of over almost $17 trillion by 2024 to 2026, so much so that even Medicare covering skilled nursing facilities at the long term, this just happened about 4 or 5 weeks ago, we had someone from the Oklahoma State Department working for the Medicare program come in and say, you have to be more stringent on your Medicare charting, so much so that the they call them the RAPs. They come in and basically they go through Medicare charting, see if you didn't cover everything under your charting. You know, like we all know in healthcare, if it wasn't charted, it wasn't done. So whatever they can pick out, if you didn't do anything, all the care that basically would be for that Medicare Part A, Part B patient or skilled is eliminated, and the costs get to be eaten up by the healthcare facility. And more times than not, those healthcare facilities are out of business because they're backed about upwards of millions of dollars. So much this stringency on Medicare is because of the looming concern that, yes, the projection is there's only so much allotted for this, the Common Trust Fund set up by Congress for Medicare, that eventually it's going to run out. So you add in these more stringent rules. Anything that Congress can do and is doing for Medicare to be able to help keep that alive so it doesn't run out, such as the stringency, because healthcare, long-term healthcare facilities in Oklahoma and other states have been doing this. The rugs, you know, these teams coming in and looking at Medicare charting. Hey, now I just wanted to make a little note on that because a lot of people, oh, well, I have, because there is something in the Affordable Care Act saying for veterans, for other people that have these type of insurance like the Medicare, they're basically on the side. They don't, you know, these are for people that don't have any insurance at all. But I have to make warning, that's not going to last for the next maybe decade or a little after a decade. For most people, I think Medicare is going to last. For what we're seeing and what I've observed for the last maybe two and a half years from the economical standpoint, you have to see where that funding comes from Medicare. It comes from the Common Trust Fund from Congress, and they're saying because of the $17 trillion national deficit, how much is going to still be put into that trust fund to be able to pay for Medicare? You know, when you have these people coming into facilities and being so much stringency, you have to know in the back of your mind something is being done to where they're going to find any loophole, any crook or cranny to be able to not pay out this money. And you'll see closings that it's already been done of these facilities. So I just want to make that little note, too. I mean, that's my answer to it. I don't know what Brett may have on it, but so I just want to let you guys know that.
Well, I mean, that's true. I mean, that's part of what I was kind of mentioning in maybe a microcosm as far as the gross domestic product, but the concept of redistribution of financial spending is the big concern, because if you're not going to allow something to be there, something else is taking it up in the budget. That's pretty much a standard budget plan from what I've learned from the different business classes I've taken. Is you can't just make money that doesn't exist, and you got to have money that means something, that when you do have it, and being in debt, especially at the level we're at in the trillions, it does, and especially when you keep borrowing money, it depreciates the dollar, and everything else we have is just figures on a pie chart or on whatever else. It means nothing if the money doesn't mean anything and we have it well distributed. That's the biggest thing that I see from what I've seen from the business financial aspect of healthcare that I've come across in the last 2 years.
Now, I can honestly say from my own standpoint is that I'm not actually entitled to state-run insurance. For a lot of reasons, I'm not going to go into the 20,000 different reasons because it would take up too much of this show. But I would say this in regards to a lot of things, I am lucky in the sense that when I have had to have medical, you know, stuff done, that I haven't been held back from what items I can have done. You know, and I've got the bills to prove it, trust me. And, you know, they're being plugged away at, but they're getting paid. But it's one of those things where I find it really disheartening that there are certain people who, you know, as I was mentioning about my friend in regards to her baby, to me, if it's a child, it shouldn't matter what insurance coverage that child is under. You know, these children are the ones who are going to be taking over the country and the world from us. And shouldn't we give them the best opportunity and the best start that we can? You know, no mom should be able to walk into the hospital and see their child, you know, covered in poop because somebody can't be bothered to do their job and look after them correctly, or shouldn't be able to, you know, at least change the kid's clothing, bathe the child. You know, when we as parents leave our children in hospitals and everything, and even if we can't stay with them all night long, you know, we expect a certain level of care, and the same with our elderly. For me, it's the same. If you are elderly, if you are, you know, a child, it shouldn't matter what health care coverage you have. You deserve that certain level of treatment. And my thing is the same, and we've discussed it before in regards to vets who have to use the VA and everything, that they deserve a certain level of care and should be. You know, you should be able to expect, if you're a veteran, to walk into any hospital, and I mean any hospital, not just the VA, any hospital in the country, and say, you know, I know you have to provide proof, but I'm a vet, here's proof of it. You know, this is what's wrong with me. And I think we owe it to the elderly, to the very young, and to our vets that they do get the best treatment humanly possible.
Well, I wanted to mention about how that comes to be, if that's okay. It has to do with, like, the
matrix,
the staffing issues that these facilities have.
basically a lot of times in trying to reduce their overhead, with the majority of the overhead, the cost being that of staffing, specifically the nursing staffing. And I've noticed this in the hospitals too. A lot of times these insurance companies will cover for a room for medicines. What is not under that coverage, that reimbursement, is actually nursing. So what happens is these healthcare companies, organizations up there in Milwaukee, Wheaton Franciscan, Aurora, down here, Mercy, in Oklahoma, it doesn't matter what part of the country you're at, what is not reimbursed under the insurance is actually nursing services. So what that means, in essence, is that these healthcare organizations pay, basically, from their own profit here, or whatever they're making in the business, to pay for nursing staff. So in doing so, they have to limit the amount of staffing. That's why they set up these matrices. That's why they set up these nursing to patient staff ratios. And a lot of times that's where you'll get the lack of care, because you set up a nurse for 6-7 patients. It could be on some shifts. And what you do is you limit the amount of quality care that a nurse or nursing staff, whatever CNAs, whatever it is, that they provide for these patients. And it can seem to the families, because it's unbeknownst to them, they don't know the dynamics of what's set up in as far as overhead for a healthcare. And Brett can, I'm sure he can expound more on it, since this is his forte, this is what he knows, that you basically can leave a patient for a matter of your shift upwards to an hour, 2 hours, not intentionally, but that's in essence what happens. And what unfolds is you see these people, you know, they're not lying. And some of it is, you know, that's not the excuse. Some of it is bad nursing. I don't mean to scare the public out there, but there aren't always the best healthcare providers. That's just being honest. But for the case where the case is, you know, that nurses are overwhelmed, say if they're working with a patient with a code, they have all this, and it's a very high, you know, it's a patient that is needing a lot of high care right now. They could be stuck in a room for an hour to 2 hours, yet they have 5-6 other more patients. That's already an hour or two where they don't see the patients. A lot can happen when basically no one else is in that room. That's the reason behind why they set up the nursing, because it's something that is not reimbursed, as in like a room, as a medicine, as all these things that you'll see on insurance. And it's been proven that the nursing is not. They don't consider that. So what happens is these businesses pay for the nursing staff.
And what you think of the way in which healthcare is now. It wasn't like it was back when it was first initiated in this country, when we had the early wars, you know, even prior to that in different eras and such with, you know, Florence Nightingale, the whole nine yards. And then nowadays you have this concept of commercialization, capitalization. And what happens is it is about money, unfortunately. So the crux, the double-edged sword to that is this. You have a concept made in a business model implemented into a nursing model as much as possible, even though the two don't always compare together, and you're out to make money. Well, the money-making parts of some of these places are generating through a rehab facility in a nursing home, are turnover to be able to not have a long period of time, cost-effective processes in the hospital. So when you have these things, the biggest concern is you have almost – I hate to see television, but you have this fixation on what's bread and butter, so to speak. But in doing so, you're omitting one of the big things that can be the proverbial shot to the foot, which is the customer service, which is still part of this McDonaldization of healthcare. So in the process of trying to achieve your ability to still have a successful business, and this is what I learned from my organizational development class, who was we had a consultant who did, and I think I mentioned on the previous show, we had an international consultant who did business around the world teach this class. I picked his brain every class. We talked after class. And he kept telling me that you can do whatever you want as far as have this awesome plan in place, but when it's not implemented with the right aspects that all come together to be a successful business, customer service, whatever, then all you're going to do is have a plan that's empty. So you can't expect to save money. You can't expect to make money. Let's say I'll use a nursing home. You can't have a whole unit devoted to rehab, which is your money maker, okay, and then not provide customer service, because what happens is you're just going to eliminate that from coming because of word of mouth, because of possible issues, like in recent weeks, I know there was a news concern with one of the places. If you have things that are going to be detrimental to you, whether it be word of mouth, news exposure, so on and so forth, these things that sometimes aren't implemented into a plan, then all you can do is hope that everything works somehow, and most of the time it's by a false lull of osmosis, which I had a clinical nurse specialist tell me, says, you never do anything by osmosis, which is one of the key things I've ever taken from my experiences in nursing, is you have to know what you're doing, you have to know what's going on. And that's the biggest thing, because what does it matter if we have this awesome money-making machine that's going to create revenue and we're going to be shitty as hell in the process? It's not going to do any good, because no one's going to want to come in, and in some places hospitals aren't going to, they're not going to want to do transfers. There's a whole gamut of things that come about because of that. So you got to keep it in mind too. That's a key factor.
I just wanted to mention a little attachment to that in regards to the Affordable Care Act. And the key thing a lot of times is going to be discharge for the provider and the nursing staff. If they don't be able to, if they're not able to keep it, you know, some of the core measurements like the on COPD, MI, CHF, there's a few, there's four of them. Basically, for these diagnoses, they've said that if there's a, for readmissions, if they come back, these patients, within a 30-day time frame, the hospital will, they'll take the bill because of all the readmission costs that are coming by for these insurance, you know, for the, it has to do with Medicare patients in regards to the Affordable Care Act. Basically, they step up again for the nursing staff to do great, and as well as providers, to do great discharge planning for the patients. The Affordable Care Act, the people that said this, had kept this in mind, as a lot of the times where there's a lot of exhaustive expenditures on readmissions coming back in. This is one of the key things that they're going to try and do to also limit costs of the Affordable Care Act of 2010. However, there's a dilemma involved with that, because sometimes even with the most informed discharge planning, there may be a misunderstanding, a language barrier, so on and so forth, where something isn't disseminated and someone comes back. Or they could even have a second MI, and it could not even be unrelated, but what will happen, and I've already had this in my policy and ethics and other courses I've taken in graduate school, is that if it still fits the diagnoses, they'll still not cover it, which is very, it's not appropriate, because you basically have a new condition, but if whatever way they find that it's related to whatever diagnosis was when you've been readmitted, or what would be a readmission on your discharge, you'll basically, the hospital will have to pay that in a way to save money from Medicare. Again, going back to what I alluded to earlier, how the funds are decreasing. I made also a mention for my professor, what if you have a second exacerbation of COPD, which isn't uncommon, especially for end-stage COPD. The same thing applied. Because it's related to the diagnosis in which someone is discharged on, they'll still check it on to the hospital, seeing as that was a diagnosis to which the patient was discharged. It's very detailed, and to me, it's very conniving. But again, it has to go back to the bigger picture. Medicare is trying to save money, as I mentioned before, because the funds are basically going to run out. That's the projection set for, you know, like the fiscal. The Congress, and Brett knows probably more so than I, in more detail, the fiscal budgets, every time each year, there's only, and sometimes, you know, they set an amount of a few billion dollars, and they set like a leeway amount of about, I don't know, $20 billion. I don't know all the fine details, since I'm more of the clinician, the provider side of it. Brett can probably allude to it more, but any attempts to try and save as much money as possible is being put into this Affordable Care Act, from the readmission to the administration fees, people imposing, you know, insurance. All in all, it's basically more beneficial to the legislators. You know, it doesn't help the people. It helps the government. It's not for the people. I mean, I've discerned this. I've sifted through many of the papers on it. People think, oh, it's a good idea maybe because it's access to health care, but you have to understand, what are you really getting? What is really involved with this act? You know, there's more to it than just meets the, you know, the superficial eye. Okay, this is what it says, and a lot more intricacies involved in the act. So.
Well, I hate to interrupt you guys, but we're coming up for the 10 o'clock hour here. So I want to thank you both for calling in and, you know, at least giving your opinion on things. It's actually nice when you can get medical personnel talk about what's going on and that, because, you know, you can give a little bit more understanding to those of us who, you know, we just hear, you know, we get fed what's on the news and everything. And as I said, I tried reading some of the Obamacare Act and didn't have much luck. The terminology of it was just completely gone for me. So I really appreciate both of you being on and, you know, calling next time. We will definitely do this again. You know, I love having you guys on the show. So just thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Have a good night.
So we are going to play a quick song and lead us into our second hour of the show. And as I say, we, you know, said a few words about the attacks in New York. And let's just, how New York just bounces back, this song seems to be a perfect one.
I'm out at Brooklyn, now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow, but I'll be hood forever, I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere, yeah, they love me everywhere, I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway, pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street, catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry, cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas, me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my ties. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from
New York.
Yankee hat more famous than a Yankee can. You should know I bleed blue, but I ain't a crypto. But I got a gang of walking with my click though. Welcome to the melting pot. Corners where we selling Africa been by the home of the hip hop. Yellow cap, gypsy cap, dollar cap, holla back. For foreigners, it ain't fair. They act like they forgot how to act. 8 million stories out there in the naked. City is a pity, half of y'all won't make it. Me, I got a plug, special ed, I got it made. If Jesus paying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade. 3 dice, Z-Lo, 3 card, Marley. Labor Day parade, rest in peace, Bob Marley. Statue of Liberty, long live the World Trade, long live the King, yo. I'm from the Empire State. That's step out of bounds quick, the sidelines is lined with casualties who sip to life casually, then gradually become worse. Don't fight the Apple Eve, caught up in the in crowd. Now you're in style, and in the winter gets cold, in vogue with your skin out. City of sin, it's a pity on a whim. Good girls going bad, the city's filled with them. Mommy took a bus trip, now she got a bust out. Everybody ride her, just like a bus route. Hail Mary to the city, you're a virgin, and Jesus can't save you. Life starts when the church in. Came here for school, graduated to the highlight. Ball players, rap stars, addicted to the limelight. Empty and May got you feeling like a champion. The city never sleeps, better slip you an ambient.
gotta get up.
Hold an intelligent conversation for an hour without talking about unicorns and glitter.
I think you should let them keep on.
I'm actually going to do this. We actually have a spare slot on a Thursday,
mm-hmm.
and I think it would be great if we just let the two of them, one Thursday, just do their thing. Just like the Burdick's Uncensored. Because for one thing, you know, they both live different sides of the country. One's down south, one's up here, obviously. you know, and their views, even though they're twins, they have some very similar takes on things, but their views are very different as well. And I think that they need the verdict consensus. So if you two guys, let me know. We have Thursday slots available. You two can get you situated. You can then just talk away for 2 hours and get all your viewpoints across. We have no problem with that, do we, Mr. Trout?
No problem at all.
But I am impressed. I managed to speak like a normal human being for an hour. I think I need, like, chocolate or something. I'm getting a headache from being normal. Doesn't do me any good, you know. But anyway, welcome to the second hour of Hazel Runs Her Mouth. I am your wonderful, intelligent, crazy, sparkly, unicorn-riding, glittery, naked,
unicorn
lovable.
Riding.
I ride unicorns when I was looking. Lovable, wonderful,
okay,
huggable, delightful Hazel. I'm here with my Chocolate Thunder, the superhero of the day, R-Trill. And then I'm here with the mighty midget who's nearly as tall as me, Robert, who's got a strap on at the moment because he got told off. So he's not speaking. He's just batting his eyelids very heavily and not even looking at his mama. That's fine. I understand. See where it's coming from. So, yeah, I want to thank... Basically, AJ, up here in the Midwest right now, we have extreme heat. We have had for the past couple of days. Humidity levels are very, very high. And AJ decided that, it was, you know, we needed groceries. He went grocery shopping. And the bus went past him when he was coming home. So he decided to walk. And it's a pretty long walk. It's like a good 45-minute walk. That's when you don't have bags of groceries and a backpack full of groceries as well, which he decided to do on a very, very hot day. He didn't drink water or anything while he was doing it, and when he got home was a complete and utter mess. He had the shakes, his legs were feeling funny and weak, and he's been like it a couple of times before, and I know that's him going through dehydration. So I'm literally throwing water at him to get his levels back up and everything. And he's doing a bit better now, but he just should be doing that. But what can you do? He's a man. Since when have men actually listened to the women in their lives? They don't. Ha-ha. There you go. So basically, that's what was going on. Now we're going to be moving on to, you know, a couple of other topics and everything. And nothing too serious. We've had our serious moment. Now we're just going to lighten things up. But while we do that, I need to go get myself an ice cream because I'm a fat female and I can't go for more than 20 minutes without putting food in my mouth. So I am going to play you some Young Jeezy and Neo and Leave You Alone.
Wake up in the morning and I ain't gone. All I ask, let me just do me. And maybe just me and you can get along. Had the mother mad when they seen us. Had the matching Rolexes, baby, team us. Yeah, the earth is our turf, we can share the world. Maybe even go half on the baby girl.
Feel so good. She said, I would if I could, but I gotta leave you alone.
With the front, hit it from behind. Love and loyalty never cross a line. Just hit a jitter up when I cross your mind. Show you how to get your own, you won't be watching mine. Put you up on G, show you how to shine. And maybe we can kick it when I got a time. Be my backbone and need a spine. Gotta know you ride with me if I'm running wrong. In case I wake up in the morning and it's all gone. Best believe I'ma get it right back. That's the hustler in me, I know you like that. You probably think I'm with a different broad every night. When I think about it, man, you probably right. The more I think about it, you probably wrong. Cause what you didn't think about it, shit, I'm probably wrong.
She never met me cause she just can't help but let me go ahead and do whatever the hell I want. She say she hate how much she need me. Turn around and say she don't need me. Always talking about she gon' leave me, but she don't. But maybe this time might be different cause she shed so many tears. She'll remind me of the dumb that I've done over the years. But she don't be tripping in the moments. I got her legs up by her ears. But as soon as we get done, I swear this is all I hear. She said, you ain't no good, but you feel so good. She said, what if I could, but I gotta leave you alone.
And we are back. There was actually a subject I want to talk about with AJ. Dating.
Okay.
So, in your opinion, why do men, and I know some women, I'm not just going to lump it in the men category. Okay, but why do certain people and everything feel that it's okay to have booty calls?
I guess it's one of those things for a male's point of view. It's just like, of course, we're probably the most perverted.
Yeah, but this is some of the conversations I've had with my friends. So, but anyhow, carry on.
Yeah, so men are like most perverted and sexual. Ones that, you know, want sex all the time, they can have it like all day, every day if they could. But
it's awfully tiring.
Yeah, it can be.
All day, but, every day. When would you sleep?
Most men won't want that.
When would you sleep? When would you eat?
Probably, they might take breaks.
Have fun.
Good point.
2 minute warning.
But no, I mean, the whole thing
and
is,
they're talking about it now.
Yeah.
That's funny. But
no, the whole thing is this, though. I understand that we all have needs. We'll mm-hmm. just leave it, put it that way. We all have needs. But maybe women just don't talk about it as much, because if they do, they're labeled hoes and all this lot.
Mm-hmm.
But men? It seems like men tend to have a couple of women who are their booty call women.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me wonder, you know, why? Just why? From a male point of view.
Well, it's just like, I guess we could get a different woman, different day, probably could, but just...
Is it laziness that you have the same a booty call person?
I don't think it's laziness. It's just like, I know guys, they just want something different, like try something different, or it's something. He's gonna be grossed out. But anyways, they like if one girl will probably won't do one thing, but if they find another girl that will do another. So if they can find that girl that's got the whole package and do the whole, everything, I think that's when you'll probably be like, okay, maybe I should be with her. So,
but is there a certain kind of woman that a guy that's looking for a booty call looks for? Obviously, somebody who isn't going to do the 20,000 phone calls during the week. Where are you? What are you doing? When are you coming over next? I miss you. I love you, baby. Obviously, they're not looking for that.
Yeah.
But what is the type of woman they're looking for?
Just one that just like them. That just want it and that's it.
I know.
There's money right there.
But it brings up the thing of like, then why is it acceptable for men to do that and not for women?
Most men, I think it's mainly just society, because they label women like if they do all that, they're this and they're that. I think it's just society. But I know it happened to men, probably wouldn't even care if women did what they wanted to do.
I would.
So what if I came to you, AJ, and said, okay, before we got together, I had like 50 or 60 sexual partners. What would your thoughts on that be?
Me personally? I wouldn't care.
What?
But why wouldn't you care?
Wait, what?
For right now, that's your past.
Okay. Okay, moving on to something else. And it's a topic we actually discussed earlier. What about these men who are with people? They got a partner and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do the, oh, so-and-so's interested in me. This person's interested in me. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know why somebody would do that if they are, like, in a serious relationship. I just don't get that. It's like, you're happy with this person. And suddenly you're just saying that. It's just like, then what you with this person for? You only want to do what? Make her jealous or something?
I can understand coming out and mentioning it if this person has hit on you a lot, you know, is trying to cause problems in your relationship.
Right.
But just to make another person jealous, I really don't understand that.
So,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's like, guys at times want to see a catfight. My old high school, Riverside University High School, mostly all the girls were fighting each other all the time. There was nothing but most of the girls, not much of a guy fight.
But I don't see the point in that, okay? If you came to me and said, oh, so-and-so's hitting on me, be like, okay, what do you want me to do about it? You should fight her. No.
No, me, I'm just letting you know what's going on, but...
The only time that I would actually fight someone is if they put their hands on my son.
And I'm like...
And then it's on.
The same thing happened to me, like a girl was flirting with me. Let's say it's like, for instance, like a girl was flirting with me, like, flirting, whatever, but it's like, if it goes too far, then I'm going to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And just be like, I'll let you know, yeah, this person is flirting with me, but that's right now is all it is, but if it goes too far, I'm going to say something.
Right. Because my thing is this, okay, is I totally understand that, for example, if I hit on my friend's husband, not that I would ever do that,
mm-hmm.
but I'm saying if I hit on my friend's husband, I would expect my friend's husband to tell her and say, you know what, this is what's going on. But I don't understand this whole trying to make your partner jealous thing.
Only is like trying to make it seem like she's better or something. Or...
Right, and the only way I'm going to try and make you jealous is if I go out and I find your favorite candy and I come back and tease you with it. That's the only thing to me, that, but even then, it's not a jealousy thing. It's a joking around and that lot.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that I am not a very jealous person. I will say this. I do have issues with women who, it appears to me, are trying to hit on you and be all over you, because I know you well enough to know that you don't always see what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had that conversation before. You know,
mm-hmm.
where those type of things have happened, and we just, you know, you don't see it. Everybody else sees it, but you don't.
I guess part of the way I don't see it is just because it's like, I never had that attention growing up, or never had that attention during high school until my senior year. And just like, after high school, it was just like, same thing. Didn't have that many friends. And you have no attention, and whatever, then just out of nowhere, just like when stuff at the time was going right for me, it just, you send the attention.
But yeah, I don't understand that whole jealousy thing. And it's like, you know, when guys complain about their women dressing up in a certain way and
mm-hmm.
everything, for me, if I get dressed up and you and me are going out, I'm getting dressed up for you. Do you know what I mean? Because I want to look good for you. I want people to, when they see us together, not look at one of us and say, well, one of you's looking good and the other one could have put in more effort. You know what I mean?
My thing is, I don't give a damn what you would wear. If it was something like sexy or like something you wear like a lingerie type thing or something like that, I wouldn't care.
But you know, when we go out, depending on where we go, I dress for the occasion. Like when we go to wrestling shows, 9 times
mm-hmm.
out of 10, it's jeans and a wrestling shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we went and did the fundraising for Maddie's Memory, it was jeans and my then Maddie's Memory t-shirt, which is now a big, huge stain on it. When we went out clubbing, it was club wear. You know, and it's my thing is it's like dressing appropriately for that time thing. But as I said, I dress so that you're not embarrassed. Robert's going to be embarrassed of me. I'm his mom. You know, that's how it is. But it's that whole making sure that you look a certain way and you dress for your man. I'm not dressing to impress anybody else other than you. Because as my mom said, when you're with somebody, you want them to, especially if you've been out, you want them to, you know, be loving how you looked, enjoyed how you looked, and anxious to get you home. Because you've impressed them, you've made them feel wanted and everything. So this whole jealousy side of things, I don't get. But speaking of that and bits on the side, we'll play another song.
Because
I have the right song for this one.
But I got something to say.
Okay, what?
Excuse me, Jesus was black. Ronald Reagan was the devil, and the government was lying about 9/11. Thank you. Have a good night.
Yeah, creep with me.
I met your girl, I text your girl. wake up body aching, and I fall asleep frustrated. She says she loves.
Okay, for people that didn't get what I was saying,
it's a line from the Boondocks.
Exactly.
Season one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we all know, football season has started.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I've got to look at my own.
That's all I have to say on the subject.
Football.
Let's move on to something else. That's all I have to say on the subject of football.
No.
Wait, your Dolphins won.
I know my Dolphins won. I'm ecstatic about that. Shame the Packers sucked. On. Well, no, actually saying that, that game was not a bad game.
No, because they're one of the best teams in the league.
It really, yeah, it really wasn't a bad game. The Packers did a lot, but, it, you know, it's game one. Sometimes you need that first game just to see where you need your improvements made, what you need to do and everything. And the Packers did make some mistakes, let's be perfectly
mm-hmm.
honest.
They only lost by, like, a touchdown.
Right.
True. But, yeah, they did make a comeback and had the lead.
Right. And, see, and that was the thing is that they did put on a good game. They really did. But what are your predictions for, like, the upcoming season? Who do you reckon we can – first of all, what is your prediction for the Packers in regards to wins and losses?
Wins and losses. I probably only see them losing, like, 5 games. So they're probably going to end up being 10-5.
Okay, who do you actually see going through to the Super Bowl this year?
It'll be the Packers versus the Texans.
The Packers versus the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
What do you reckon on that, Robert? I personally would love to see a Packers versus Dolphins Super Bowl. Because
hey.
that in this household would prove to be a very interesting day.
It could happen.
It could happen, and it would be really good if it did.
You know,
Robert, can you tell my friend Bob?
They actually won their game.
I know.
But, you know, it has to be said that the Dolphins have had some pretty bad seasons the past few years. You know, they haven't exactly performed up to par. And
I think it was like, what, three, four years ago they was last time in the playoffs?
Right. That's very true.
No, I think it was the year before. Before they let go of Chad Pennington. I don't even know if they still got him.
Well, while we think of another topic for the last 30 minutes, I'm going to play another song. And here we go.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Vince, please don't do this.
I just had the best year of my career. I gotta keep things fresh.
Well, then let's just go to Foot Locker. They got all the fresh new gear.
But I have real talent.
Can I get playback?
Okay.
Is that me?
And we are back. I'm sorry, I had to play that last Foot Locker commercial because it absolutely has me in hysterics. It really does. It's like one of the funniest. Right. You can. I don't think they're ever going to be. Foot Locker's not going to be able to top that commercial. Let's just put it that way. And the fact that he's willing to make a fool of himself like that on there just says so much about who he is. It really does. We're in the last 24 minutes of the show, which has gone really quickly. I want to do another quick thank you to Brett and Bart Burdick for calling in. And
on the big screen.
But no, I mean, it is. I know mostly my shows are comical and we have a good laugh and everything, but there are times when you have to take it down to the seriousness that it is. And with today being September 11th, I couldn't in good conscience do one of my normal really funny shows. It was time to just take the day and have it and just be a bit more respectful to what's going on.
Yeah, we tried.
You know, and we've had a couple of little giggles and everything, but, you know, on the whole, you know, there are times you just have to take some serious issues and go with it. But with the last, as I say, we've got 23 minutes left of the show. What is coming up this week on the WFSO Radio Network, let me tell you. Friday morning at 9 a.m., we have the premiere of the Re-Up show. Tony Re-Up is a very good friend of mine. I've known him for a couple of years now. If any of you are on his friends list, which you may be, he has a lot of people on there. His status is, and the Hump Take commercial is on. It's Hump Day. Anyway, Tony actually is very outspoken. He is one of those people who gets a lot of heat because he says it how it is. He's one of those people, this is the best way to describe it. If he came in from outside and said, you know what, it's really hot out there, you wouldn't have to look out the window to think. You would know, okay, it's hot out there. He is straight up, he's to the point. Times he's blunt, times he can be rude. But you know what? Everybody who we have on our shows and everything is entitled to their own opinion. They're entitled to feel, think, and say what they want. And that's basically what WFSO Radio Network is about. It's not about following the set pattern of the norm and of what people like and all this lot. It's about talking from your heart and saying what's on your mind, which is why when we do WFSO Aftermath, our wrestling show on Mondays, you know, our views are very different. Sometimes they're the same, but it's our views. And they're, you know, none of them are right and none of them are wrong. They belong to you. The same with my show. As everybody knows, my show ranges from serious and subjects like today, like healthcare, September 11th, that kind of thing. And we go off the deep end sometimes and talk about glitter, unicorn, you know. Craziness, complete craziness. But to me, that's how it should be. That's how life is. Life isn't just the same monotony day after day after day. You know, you have to live your life for you. And we need to stop, you know, beating each other up and going after all these other things. We need to look on the bright side of life. So with that in mind, I have another song to play. For those of you who are Monty Python fans or know any of the Monty Python movies, you'll know this song. Some of you may know it even if you haven't watched any of the Monty Python ones, but here we go.
Cheer up, Brian. You know what they say? Some things in life are bad.
mistake and really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Hey. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on! Always look on the right side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side.
Available in the foyer. Someone's got to live as well, yeah. Who do you think pays for all this rubbish? I'm going to make the money back, you know. I told him. I said to him, Bernie, I said, they'll never make that money back.
So we are back.
Yes.
So you know what we say?
What's that?
Always look on the bright side of life. Do-do, do-do.
I swear to God that song can be like a Blue's Clues theme song or something.
We do not associate the life of Brian with Blue's Clues. For one thing, you would not let your child who is able to watch Blue's Clues watch Life of Brian.
Blue's Clues? Wait, why not?
You just wouldn't. Because of its content and everything. The movie is actually really good. If you're a Monty Python fan, then you'll like him.
I can't believe it was actually a movie.
Life of Brian is, yeah. It's where Brian gets mistaken for being Jesus. Because it's born at the same time. And it is hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious.
Oh,
and he gets crucified at the end with Jesus.
Okay, because I know the rain and all. England is different than it is in the U.S., but in the U.S., what would that movie be rated?
Probably an R, because of content.
Okay.
But, I do have to get the Monty Python movies. There's Life of Brian, which was funny. The Meaning of Life, which is hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Then you've got, and there's a whole bunch of other Monty Python movies, but then you've got movies that feature the Monty Python cast.
Mm-hmm.
Such as A Fish Called Wanda. Okay, you know in A Fish Called Wanda, the guy who stutters?
Yeah.
That's the guy who sang that song.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's him.
Oh my God.
But yeah, so I mean, there is there a great comedy skit that came out in the 60s and the 70s. They ran for a very long time. John Cleese was made famous because of it, and he, especially when he did the Ministry for Funny Walks. There's, you know, they really are, you know, great comedy and everything. And I love them. It's probably the English in me, but they're just classic.
Well, as we get towards the end of the show, I'm actually, my mouth don't want to work. No. I am absolutely, I am so tired. I've had a nasty headache all day. And it's been a long, hot day. So yeah. Many things are going on that we're having to deal with, and
that she has to run her mouth.
I literally have run my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just to make everybody smile, we need to do this again.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Ronnie, how happy are folks who save hundreds of dollars switching to Geico?
I'd say happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Hump day!
Get happy. Yeah. Get Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
As the camel says, hump day!
We'll find your people and start humping.
I agree. We should all have a good hump.
What the?
Okay, that's disturbing. Anyhow, we're going to round out this show now. It's 10:46 here in the Midwest.
Midwest?
Which means it's 11:46 on the East Coast.
Yeah.
East Side. It is 8:46 on the West Coast. West Side.
Oh, very lucky.
So I think we're just going to play another song. And we're going to end it for the night. So I just want to remind everybody that we have coming up on Friday, the re-up show at 9 a.m. Tune in. It's its premiere show. I will be listening. Saturday we have
the MMA hour.
The MMA hour, which will probably actually run 2 hours.
1 hour.
But it will be slated for that with the MMA Godfather, Roosevelt, and AJ, I'm sure, will be calling in to chat with him.
Yeah. Because he needs a co-host.
What do we have Sunday?
Sunday, after the WWE pay-per-view at 10 o'clock, we're going to recap all of what happened at Night of Champions, which when it will be fresh off our minds.
So it's basically going to be the Night of Champions rewind.
Uh-huh.
Then we have Monday at 10:30, WSSO Aftermath.
Yep.
Which might be actually running on two stations that night. It could be running on WFSO Radio Network and also on Tom Deaf Radio.
Correct.
Which could be interesting. Tuesday, we have the beginning of the Smarks List, if I'm not mistaken.
Two more weeks
for the Smarks List? Good grief.
The Night Light is coming Tuesday, but
the following Tuesday.
Right.
Okay, that's the 24th.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Which is actually when SmackDown is in town, which we're hoping to be at.
Uh-huh.
So I'm gonna say goodnight to everybody.
Good night, everybody.
I'm gonna play you out with this song. So it's goodnight from me, Hazel, your glittery host, as I ride into the moonlight on my unicorn.
On the WFSO Radio Network.
Good night.
Couple shots of Patron. I ain't feeling nice. I get your eyes to tight.
party poppers on the fist, coming with me tonight. I ain't sell the linen, I ain't snapping and popping either. I'm bobbing my head, or I'm just standing there watching. I'm a hustler, a hustle. You can tell that I'm paid and I protect what I got. I'm in the house with my man, you fucks gon' get it. Okay, now maybe I'm silly, cause I want you to trip. Yeah, I be on that. You should see when I'm starting, I flash the stones to be rolling. Push the bitch to be rolling. You can tell that I'm just doing my thing. You know the units, the gang. I got my crime, you say you with me. You front, you'll have to get me off your ass. I bid a lawsuit and laugh. It's not a big deal, it's nothing but the best.
You know, you're acting like you're down now. I said the club or fuck show. This look is gon' bring more dough. You know what you're acting like you're down now. You know you're acting like you're down now. I said the club or fuck show. This look is gon' bring more dough. You know what you're acting like you're down now.
When me and got together to do this music, the more we became enveloped, we just developed a fellowship through it. There's no pretension, it's friendship, me nemesis, it's a soon nemesis. The same for him, it's just media, see the image. Images. No gimmicks, just blood in and blood out. When it's peak, you just gotta know when the blood in and blood out. If there's a problem, we solve it. We don't resolve it. It usually just evolves into one big brawl, and we all get involved in it. We should all get a merit. It's my peak we inherit. And wear it like a badge of honor. Pass it around and share it. And let it go to whoever's holding the most current beef on their shoulders. And the soldiers got their backs to the sofa. But tonight, we ain't coming here to beef with nobody. We came to party. Next gas is a Mr. Ferrari, so it's shady.
You run it, you know you're acting like it.